What's up? This is Movies on Up, the truth. Shit.
All over our chest.
What's up? This is Movies on Up, the truth lies beyond lying directly. Well, seated directly across from me is my co-host, Mr. Dave Becella.
That ain't no lie.
That ain't no lie. That's the truth. That's Dave the Truth Becella. I am Ryan. We are Movies on Up. The truth lies beyond is our tagline for this week. If you think you know what movie that comes from, send your guess to us in one of the three following ways. You can email us, moviesonup@gmail.com. If you leave your guess on our Facebook page right next to Hocus Pocus, facebook.com/moviesonup, or you can tweet your guess at us on the Twitter @moviesonup if you are correct. And if we choose you, I was gonna make a pun about the name of the movie. If you're a fan that has some allegiance to us, we will send you a package full of all sorts of goodies and whatnot. This week, like David mentioned last week, the new Divergent movie comes out. Allegiant.
Insurgent?
No. That was the last one. Oh, nice. Actually, you said you didn't want to watch either of those. I've actually seen both of those.
I have two.
How about that?
I have two.
Oh, you didn't want to watch it again. Fair enough.
The first one was okay. The second one, bleh.
I agree. I agree. And I'm not really looking forward to the third one. But we do like Shailene Woodley an awful lot. So we thought, all right, let's just do one of her movies that doesn't have anything to do with really terrible henna tattoos. So we have turned to James Ponsoldt's The Spectacular Now, which, as big a fans of Woodley, we may be just as big, if not bigger, of Ponsoldt. This is the second of his movies that we've done. We did Smashed.
Back when this movie came out, I believe.
Yeah, probably. So I would say maybe like 2 years ago, we did Smashed. Yeah. Another really, really good movie. This time around, starring Miles Teller, Shailene Woodley, and Brie Larson. The movie opened up wide September 13th of 2013 to a whopping $704,000. It was in 17th place behind Insidious Chapter 2.
Not so spectacular.
Not a spectacular opening figure. Opened behind Insidious Chapter 2, which was number one with $40 million, followed by The Family, Riddick, Lee Daniels, The Butler, and We're the Millers. I kind of forgot about that
movie.
I
liked We're the Millers.
I liked it too. It was just kind of fun. Oh, that's when that movie came out. Flew under the radar. It was really good. Turns out it came out in 2013. It went on to gross $6.8 million, which is good domestically for 4,826th place all time. Dave, can you guess the movie that is one spot above it in 4,825th place? It is a Paul Walker vehicle.
The remake of District B-13. What's that called? Broken Walls?
No, I'm sorry. It's a good guess.
Or the other, the hockey puck one.
It's very clearly not any of the Fast and Furious movies. It is Running Scared.
That's the hockey puck one. He gets hit in the face with a hockey puck.
There you go.
That was my second guess.
Okay. Very good. One spot below it, you mentioned the plot keywords to Spectacular Now. High school senior. This one.
Men's clothing store.
Very similar, minus men's clothing store. Lots of very, very young, famous people that are still ridiculously famous today. Two of them are playing superheroes now.
Dazed and Confused?
It is not Dazed and Confused. It is 200 Cigarettes, starring Paul Rudd and Ben Affleck. Two of those guys, superheroes now, so who the hell knew? There's a ton of movies around this sort of sweet spot, and it's maybe just a sweet spot for me. Cedar Rapids, which is a movie I love an awful lot, is right around here on the all-time lists. And then, at least on this page in Box Office Mojo, there's the back-to-back twin billing of Suburban Commando, the Hulk Hogan movie, and Red Sonja. I love both of those. Unabashedly love them. But that should give you roundabout a good idea of how commercially successful this movie is. But it's commercial success notwithstanding. It's a good movie, though. Great movie, I think.
Real good movie.
Spectacular movie.
Yeah. Ponsoldt, he got really good performances with Smash, and I don't remember if this was opened wide.
Opening was the 13th, and it wasn't on that many screens.
Yeah,
I'm pretty sure it was under 20.
Because I don't think Smashed was ever a wide opening either.
No, and I don't mean to kind of slam the movie by saying that it didn't open very well. It was a small movie, and that's the format of these kind of shows. We just talk box office just to give you an idea. And really, for opening to $700,000, I mean, $6.8 million at the box office is not terrible. This movie, I don't know what the budget was, but I don't imagine it was
very much.
Yeah,
it couldn't be that much. Because, I mean, this was, Teller was on his way up. Miles Teller wasn't where he is now.
I feel like they all were. I mean,
Shailene Woodley.
Certainly.
Brie Larson's going to win an Oscar
exactly.
this year. She won an Oscar this year. perhaps.
Weeks ago.
Yeah.
It's old news.
I forget who won it. I assume she did. But Mary Elizabeth Winstead, she's gotten a lot of acclaim. But he gets really good performances. And to compare this to Smashed, they're different movies, but there's a lot of similarities there. And
certainly. And we'll get to those. I'm not necessarily, I'm glad I mentioned it because I mentioned it in this way for a reason. Instead of doing Divergent, we wanted to find a Shailene Woodley movie. And we picked this. I think about this movie, and in my head, it's her movie. But when you go back and watch it,
it's Teller.
Miles Teller.
It's Miles absolutely. Teller's movie. It's absolutely Miles Teller's movie.
And he's great.
Yeah, I'm not a big Teller fan. But that kind of plays into this because he's not the most likable guy. He's not the most likable character. And I feel like the reason I don't like Teller is because I feel like in real life he's the kind of person I wouldn't hang out with, which is what he's playing in this. And I guess I don't really like Teller because I imagine he's not far off from this character. Yeah, it is his movie. She just steals every scene she's in.
Really, I think there's a lot of scene-stealing performances.
Bob Odenkirk, every scene he's in is a highlight to me.
Odenkirk's great. Jennifer Jason Leigh is really, really good. I think Kyle Chandler shows up as Sutter's dad. He's really good. I mean, he nails that role perfectly as a completely dysfunctional alcoholic, sort of a bizarro world, perhaps, if you don't change your ways, ghost of Sutter future.
And I mean, that's my favorite scene of the whole movie is with Odenkirk.
The alternate version of his dad.
Yeah, where Bob Odenkirk, I got to let somebody go. I'll keep you if you can promise not to come drunk. I can't make that promise. He just says, I guess if I were your dad, this is where I would yell at you. Or this is where I would give you a lecture. And he says, if you were my dad, you wouldn't have to. And that exchange right there, I talk about moments a lot in movies. And that's one of the moments in that movie that has to hit because Teller is a flawed character. But he knows it. He's self-aware. He knows his weaknesses. He doesn't just know that he has it. He knows where it came from. So that exchange there, it's such a brief exchange. But that hits me. That sticks out. I know I've talked about that scene on this podcast before.
Certainly.
And we've never done a Spectacular Now episode. So, I mean, that scene right there just sticks out.
From a moment standpoint, a lot of that is the acting and a lot of that is the filmmaking. And I think Ponsoldt specifically does a great job of hitting those emotional moments throughout the stories. They come across when they need to. And certainly, I think that's kind of a hallmark of his. There are some other sort of fingerprints of his that are all over this movie. Specifically with this one and Smashed, I mean, a lot of it, alcohol abuse is kind of very central to it. You've got dysfunctional relationships, great performances by the entire cast, and the actors, like the lead actors, whether it's Aaron Paul or Miles Teller, they're not necessarily guys you would think of that are leading men, but he gets great performances out of each of them.
Yeah, and not just them. Like, the performance is all around. Like, you got Mary Elizabeth Winstead in Smashed and Shailene Woodley here and then Miles Teller, Aaron Paul. Like, just all around, he knows how to get stuff from his actors. And that's why you mentioned his strength and the emotional parts. That's the big part of it, is because he knows how to pull that from them. I mean, it helps that he gets great actors, but
oh, certainly
great actors can do bad work.
Right. I don't mean to say that, you know, these guys are only good.
Oh, no, no, no. I'm not saying you were, but it's just, you can't just blame it on having great actors because great actors do. Miles Teller was just in Fantastic Four. You know, we're not praising his performance as Reed Richards.
He was in the Divergent movies.
Yeah. So,
which I think he's good in those.
Yeah. So it's like, you get the talent, and then you maximize that talent. You can put LeBron James on the Sixers, and he's only going to be so good, whereas you utilize his talent and put him with other players like Channing Frye and Joe Johnson, and, you know, you'll...
Which has already happened.
It happened weeks
Welcome
ago.
Welcome, Joe Johnson.
Weeks ago.
Yeah.
You're about 3 weeks into your Cleveland stay now, so congrats.
It's been amazing. He's averaging 28 points a game. It's
12 assists off the bench. But I mean, I think the Cavs are poised for a good bet. Wait, what are we talking about?
That's it? Yeah, sure, whatever. The Spectacular Cavs. And specifically, it's hard to not compare these two movies because I love them both. I think it helps because we've done a Smashed episode. Maybe you may want to listen to that one. It's not required, like a prerequisite for this one.
It's not a sequel.
No, but the stories and the characters are similar. You could see where perhaps if certain events didn't happen that Amy and Sutter might grow up to sort of be Aaron Paul and Mary Elizabeth Winstead in Smashed.
Like I said earlier, they're similar movies that are way different. And I think the thing I like the most about it is Smashed is about alcoholism.
Yes.
Like 100%. Smashed is 100% about right. Mary Elizabeth Winstead is an alcoholic. Mm-hmm. Sutter has a drinking problem. There's a difference. He's functional and he drinks a lot. I would struggle
he
to call
He certainly doesn't have a moment where he throws up in front of the kids.
Yes.
And then lies about it.
And maybe this is me coming from personal experience because I've been sober for 7 years now. I don't think I would ever consider myself an alcoholic because I've met alcoholics. I know alcoholics. I never got that bad, and I feel like to claim I was an alcoholic is kind of disrespectful to them because I didn't hit that point. I did have a drinking problem, though, and I feel like there's a difference there. And Mary Elizabeth Winstead in Smash, she was an alcoholic. She suffered from alcoholism.
Certainly.
Sutter has a drinking problem. He likes to drink.
And you can see where he would end up if he didn't.
Yes.
You know, he would end up like his dad.
That drinking problem
alcoholic.
Can turn into right. alcoholism. But he was functional. And you don't see that take on it a lot in movies. You see a lot more dealt with alcoholism. You don't see the functional drinking problem as much. He's still going to work. He's still being charming. He's not.
Yeah. To me, when I talk about alcohol or anybody that's an addict, a lot of times in movies, they're portrayed one of two ways. It's really like poor intervention, crackheads, or they're very charming. And I think of Denzel in Flight. He was an alcoholic. You can make the argument that he was a functional alcoholic and that he could still fly a plane upside down, but he was charming. Whip was charming in that movie, much the same way Sutter's charming in this. And you can say that he's functional because he goes to work and he goes to school, which he does, but he's not really excelling in school. That's not...
He's getting by.
Right. It's not 100% a function of his drinking, the reason he can't or doesn't want to succeed. He's not interested in succeeding in school. But I like that his character, it comes across as flawed, but yet you're still rooting for him. Seemingly, he goes from one great situation to another, and you're thinking, how the hell can this kid just bounce from these great situations? It's because he is likable. People do want to like him, and they do want to be around him. But even, you know, when he makes bad decisions, you still kind of understand why. And much like everybody else in the movie, why do people keep wanting to, you know.
He keeps falling on his feet.
Right, exactly. And it's because he is likable. And as the viewer, you're watching him, wanting him to pull his shit together. So you could see where people in his actual life would want to do the same thing. In rewatching the movie, it sort of seems to me a little bit like two movies. You have the first half of the movie where maybe he is a functional alcoholic, where it's just kind of fun. If you can have fun teenage drinking, and I don't get arrested for saying that, it does seem like a high school senior year men's clothing store kind of romantic comedy. But then as soon as we meet Kyle Chandler, like, it just takes a sharp right turn and it becomes not as fun from then on out. And
it feels more real.
Right. Having seen the movie, like, you know it's going to happen. It's almost like a horror movie where, like, there's a character you know you like and they're going to die and you somewhat are dreading that moment when it happens. It's the same way here. You know that his life is going to get really messy for a while and it's going to really suck. And you see what he had? And you just want him to keep it. Like, figure out a way for this time for it to be different. But obviously, it can't be different. The movie's already in the can. And, I mean, I haven't read Tim Tharp's book that the screenplay was based off of. I've seen the movie enough times. I feel like I should read the book. And if I'm going to have a complaint about the movie, and I only really have two, it's that sometimes your sense of time gets a little distorted because of what they cut out. I feel like there's whole characters that got cut out. We never really meet Amy's mom. We hear about her. You hear her talk. And there's a scene where presumably that she kind of stands up to her mom and mentions that, you know, I am going to go to Philadelphia to go to college. And that should be a seminal moment for her character, which happens off screen. it's not her movie. It's Sutter's movie. So I
as it goes on, you want it to kind of be hers, though?
Yeah, or you think that we see her becoming more like him, drinking more, but maybe that scene, and I realize that you can't put everything in there, or the movie's going to be 6 hours long. I love this movie, and I'd be okay if it was 6 hours long. But having that character cut out just seemed a little weird for me. And then the time warp between when she gets hit by the car to really when she gets put on a bus. It seems like that whole thing should be about 3 months, but I feel like it's really only about a week or a week and a half, because I think that's what his mom says. And I'm like, wait, what?
Yeah, it gets messy, and there's a dozen reasons why. I trust Ponsult as a filmmaker enough to blame it on budget or time restraints
or anything.
I'm sure
time was it. Yeah.
And that's one of my biggest pet peeves in movies is when it's tricky, and that's where the Pitch Perfect movies I get angry at, because when you can't gauge time, that's where it starts to lose me a little bit. But luckily,
school,
this is at the end.
It's at the end, but in a high school movie, you should be able to gauge time pretty well by this is prom, this is graduation, and those things are in there. But sometimes that actually, I think, contributes to me not knowing how the passage of time is actually working. Because there's a scene with him and Bubs. He'll always be Bubs to me. Andre Rieu, who mentions to him that he's needs a seat on the final to pass the class. And at no point do we ever really see him working with her again or even taking the test or studying. But then it becomes obvious that obviously he got a C because he graduates. It just seemed like they needed Sutter to talk about how, what's the point in graduating? He loves these people. He loves this time in his life. He doesn't want to graduate to anything more serious because
he's
no one's
living the spectacular now.
Right. Yeah. He's living in the now and he's happy in that. And the perception is that adults, and he asked the teacher, he's like, well, are you happy? And he doesn't answer, which is a good moment. There's some ancillary things that are surrounding it that makes it seem like it was sort of misplaced. You know what I mean? There were markers there that are still in there because they need that scene, but really could have cut it out and I wouldn't have had a problem with the timing, I guess.
It just feels like there's so much going on at the end because it is this pivotal point and he's got to make this decision that's not just about his future, but it about Shailene's as well. I see where it could be come off as kind of rushed because you're trying to get a lot in there, and it's hard to criticize that because the build up to it is so good. Would I rather lose some stuff from everything we've seen already to gain that now? So I mean, it's one of those tricky things that
certainly, and I'm not suggesting,
and that's where reading the book would be.
And that's why I want to read the book, because I feel like these things would make much more sense in the book. But it's just a fact. It's a matter of adapting the book. There are going to be things that don't make it in there.
Yeah.
I would assume that's why people that read books say the book is always better, because you get everything. There's no time crunch necessarily. I'd also like to read the book to find out the ending. The ending bothers me with this movie.
I like it.
Well, let me tell you what bothers me. I like Sutter redoing the application. You know what? Maybe this is too late, but it's not too late for me. At that point, you feel pretty confident that he's going to get his act together, which on some level is like a nice consolation prize. It's what you're rooting for. Obviously, you're rooting, or at least if you're not a heartless bastard, you're rooting for him and for Amy to get together and to be together and to both succeed in life and have 38 kids. I don't know. But that's not always how life works out. And sometimes, you know, just pulling yourself out of a tailspin that he was clearly in can be considered a win. And I liked that. I thought that was enough. And whatever happens after that, you can sort of speculate. But because you don't see it, you're not led by the hand. And when they fade to black and fade back up with him in the car driving to Philadelphia and meeting her on the steps outside of school, at that point, it almost felt like they couldn't just leave it there. Like, people would have been upset. Like, oh my gosh, how can you end the movie that way? So they have him talking to her or showing up there, but stopping short of her accepting him back. You know what I mean? It's sort of feels like trying to meet someone who would be left unfulfilled, sort of trying to meet them halfway.
See, I like that. It reminds me of the, what's that Zach Braff remake movie? The Last Kiss, mm-hmm. where, spoiler alert, it ends, you know, he goes and nails the hot college chick, and it ends with him sitting on the porch for days, and then at the end, his wife opens the door, and then roll credits. The original, she doesn't open the door. It just ends with him sitting on the porch, dedicated to sitting on that porch until she opens the door. So the credits come before you know if she opens the door or not. And I like that. I like endings like that. I like this. Is she dating somebody? Does she right. have a boyfriend? Does she right. has she moved on? Is she wised up to realize like how bad he is for her or not?
And you still have that. It's still sort of up in the air.
Yeah.
But I liked not even really knowing whether or not he went back there. Or whether he just left her alone and thought, you know what, she probably is better off without me, even though that I've kind of got my stuff together. I liked that. And to bring it back to Smashed again, that's sort of how that movie ends.
Yeah.
She's in recovery, so she completely gets away from Jesse Pinkman. And he comes back. He's still in love with her. He still wants to be with her. And, you know, they're having a conversation about how they move forward, and it sort of just ends there. And you don't know
you have no idea.
If they get back together. It's left up to you. And I can see where people might think that, oh, how can you end the movie like that? We need to know. We need a resolution.
And I think that's why I love Britt Marling so much. It's how Britt Marling ends her movies.
In some instances, but I do think that there is a resolution. Like, the resolution for Mary Elizabeth Winstead's character in Smash was that she's sober. That's yeah. her resolution. It's not about their relationship. It's about her.
Just and, like this is about Sutter, and it's right, not about that relationship.
Right, right. And that is resolved in him redoing the essay saying, it's not too late for me. Credits. To me, that's a great ending. That's where it should end. But just that extra little coda, it felt like it's, I don't know, maybe it's in the book. So they sort of had to do it. That's really the main reason. Maybe I'll just read the last four pages of the book. I don't know. I don't want to say it was a cop-out. I think it watered down what would have been a great ending to approaching a stereotypical rom-com where guy gets girl, guy loses girl, guy gets girl back.
Yeah.
Where it seemed like we stopped just short of I've been waiting for you to show up, or I'm so glad you're here, blah, blah, blah.
I mean, I could see it both ways. I guess I don't have complaints about the ending. I like the ambiguity of it. Ambiguity.
And I'm okay with that. I think we still...
Ambiguity-ness?
That word. I still like the uncertainty. How about that? I like the uncertainty of him not even going there. You could assume that he might look her up, but you don't. We don't need to see that. Especially for what ends up happening when they get there. It's just kind of like, well, we were going to do this, but then, no, it's just like, it's like a tease twice.
I can see that. I like it, though. I like it.
No, I really like the movie. I really like the movie. It's just a couple little nitpicky things I have, and some of them, again, they may not have anything to do with Ponsult or the screenwriters trying to adapt a book. So maybe I should have, instead of watching the movie again, I should have read the book, yeah, to do some kind of research for this. But I'd rather watch the movie because I like the movie. I probably would like the book, too. It'd stand to reason if I like the movie, I'd probably like the book. But I'm just not willing to read. I don't like to read.
And it takes longer.
It does. Yeah, this movie, you know, you're in and out in 2 hours. I mean, Jesus. Honestly, I don't even think if I was reading the book for 2 hours, I would even get to Amy Finicky.
Probably not.
Probably not. Hoping that you'll get around to seeing Spectacular now, and if somehow you missed our Smashed episode and haven't gone and taken a look at that, hopefully that'll kind of whet your appetite, so to speak, to maybe check out both of these. Ponsult's got another one that came out, allegedly, at the end of the year last year, at the end of the tour. At this point, he's a director that I'll watch just about anything he does. He directed a couple episodes of Master of None.
The Circle coming up, which sounds awesome.
Okay. I think the projects he chooses, while they may not sound interesting to me at the start, I'm not necessarily in love with teenage romances, which is really selling this movie short. But I love this movie. I loved Smashed. So he's a director that I don't think he's necessarily on like the popular radar. Right now, I think it's a shame because I do really like his work. Hopefully at some point he'll get there either.
The Circle is going to change that. I mean, that's Emma Watson, Tom Hanks, Karen Gillan, John Boyega, Bill Paxton, Patton Oswalt. That's a movie based on the Dave Eggers book.
Yeah.
Like that.
I may have to read that book.
That'll get a wide release.
Certainly.
That'll open to more than $740,000.
The kid from Star Wars. Yeah, that's that's $740,000.
And the guy from
and the guy from
and
Force
Demons.
Gump. Yeah. That guy. The Circle is now complete on our James Ponsold. I feel like it's less a Spectacular Now episode and maybe more of a James Ponsold episode, just because he's kind of the, well, him and Mary Elizabeth Winstead are sort
like
of the
that we,
ties that bind these two movies.
We did this episode because Divergent 3 or whatever is coming out.
Yeah, Allegiant.
And so we wanted to do a Shailene Woodley movie. Barely talked about Shailene Woodley in this episode.
Yeah, that's true, because we said it at the top of the episode. I assume this is her movie, and then I start watching it, and it's a Miles Teller movie. Yeah. She's in it.
She's
great.
She's good.
She
she's
steals
really
the
good.
Scenes she's in, for sure. Yeah, I think we talked about as much Brie Larson as we did Shailene Woodley.
Yeah. Her Divergent was the anti...
Anti-Jennifer Lawrence.
Hunger Games. Yeah, because J-Law was able to do Hunger Games. I mean, she had already gotten... She got love for Winter's Passing before Winter's Bone, yeah. So, I mean, she was on the way up, and she managed that balance of doing Hunger Games and doing Oscar movies.
Doing the X-Men stuff.
Yeah, yeah. I don't know how she does it, but probably because David O. Russell makes movies in like 2 weeks. But Shailene Woodley, I feel like, got sucked into Divergent, and, you know, she had this.
Descendants.
Descendants was before those, but she had...
Right, well, I'm saying she was on her way.
Yeah,
and
she
then
had this,
hit those.
Spectacular Now, The Fault in Our Stars.
Yeah.
But then I feel like outside of The Divergent, we haven't really gotten Shailene Woodley's stuff. She had that White Bird and a Blizzard that kind of went under the radar. She got cut out of Amazing Spider-Man 2, which is probably the best thing that could have happened to her, getting off right before the train wreck happens, even though she would be a fantastic Mary Jane.
Certainly.
I really do think she would. I want to see more of her. She lacks the off-screen charisma that Jennifer Lawrence has.
I don't think I've ever seen anything from her off-screen.
Don't watch. As much as we enjoy her like on-screen, don't watch interviews with her. She is the worst. She is just she is the worst.
That's too bad.
Yeah, so don't watch interviews or anything with her. Just enjoy her on screen, because she is, for how somebody can come from such a terrible show, she was on the ABC Family show forever, and just be so damn compelling on screen. Like Descendants, I thought that was an Oscar-worthy performance. You know, Spectacular Now, she's really, really good. That cancer one, Fault in Our Stars, she's really, really
that
good.
That cancer movie.
Even the first Divergent, there's something there, but... I just feel like the last two, everybody's just there for a paycheck. Well, the second one, at least. I haven't seen the third one. I'm just
I would assume that they're further there for a paycheck.
Yeah, and Miles Teller almost essentially admitted that he felt dirty doing the Divergent movies. But she's somebody I definitely want to see more of, and I definitely don't want her to flame out after the Divergent series is over.
She's got some stuff coming up. At least from looking at the people involved, it kind of seems like she might have a chance to get out from under that a little bit. I mean, I think it's going to take us till probably about 2017 or something before she can come back with stuff that is hers. And in a
there's
role...
There's still another damn Divergent movie. Divergent. Surgent.
Yeah, that one.
Ascendant.
Yes. At least one more. I'm hoping this is the last one.
She's got that Snowden movie that's been pushed back like a dozen times. I want stuff from her. I think she's just fantastic on screen. I really do.
Yeah, and she was spectacular in this. If you're a big fan of the Divergent series, we'd love to hear about it. If you want to change her, if you see the third one and you want to convince Dave and I that we should go spend our
like,
hard-earned
the second one made no sense, right? Like, it made zero. The whole, like, dream sequences and stuff, like...
I think that was some kind of test she was trying to pass.
But that was the whole movie. That was, like, 90% of the...
It was a lot of it, yeah. It
seemed like at least half of the movie were just her doing the different tests.
Yeah, I don't think there's, I think there's a lot of tests. I don't know. I mean, I had seen the first one, saw the second one on HBO, like, I don't know, a couple months ago or something, and I was struggling to remember what happened in the first one. I'd forgot Miles Teller was in it. I was like, oh, that's right. There he is. oh, that's the cancer kid. Yeah, it was a nice little reunion from all of her movies that I like much, much more than these ones. So I don't know what's
like
happening.
Even my girlfriend, we've seen both of them, and the trailer came on the other day, and Liam James came on the screen. She goes, "That's that guy from those movies with the girl." And I'm like, "Yeah, that's the same. That's another one of those movies with that girl.
That's
the same movie." So
she looks like she's grown her hair out a little bit, though, from the second one. Was not a fan of that. Did not like the short hair. Not a fan.
I just did not like the movie.
Well, it was bad, too. Yeah. I blame it on the short hair.
The thing is, the first one was surprisingly decent.
Yeah, it was all right. I don't know what the difference between the first one and the second one. Maybe the second book was just really bad.
I mean, that's like that happened with the Maze Runner. Maze Runner, first one was pretty solid. Second one, bleh. That's not good.
That's kind of how I felt about the Hunger Games, too.
I will disagree with you, because I think all the Hunger Games were good.
Fair enough. Perhaps we'll do a Hunger Games episode later, although, no, we won't. What are we doing next week?
I closed my computer.
Yeah, who knows?
An episode.
We'll be back next week with another spectacular episode. But until then,
keep it up.